civil priority. Isolation now in effect. To avoid the risk of contamination, please stay indoors and await further instructions.
Well, good morning to everybody in Tribe World. It's Ray here again in our virus lockdown podcast interviews, and I hope you're all doing well and finding it not too distressful to be in this situation. So as we always say, you keep your dream alive and we'll get through it. And I'm delighted to have this opportunity to have these podcasts, and I know it's touching a lot of you and you're enjoying them. And so I'm joined today by somebody very special within our tribal fandom and our tribal family, who has played one of your favorite characters. And join me in welcoming the very lovely Jennifer Jill. Good morning, Jen.
Hi, Ray.
How are you, Jen? How are you coping these days? You're in Wellington right now.
I am, yeah. No, I'm doing okay. I think I'm really lucky that my work is able to be done from home. So a lot of things are just carrying on as usual for me, which I recognize as a very privileged position to be in. So feeling very grateful and very lucky at the moment.
So you're able to get out and about, though, are you? You're not stranded all the time. You do most of your work from home, but you're able to get out for a walk. And
I quite often do a sort of lunchtime lap of the block, and people in this neighborhood have been really getting into the teddy bear walk. Yeah. I don't know if they're doing that in Australia, but it's wonderful. People are putting loads of teddy bears and sort of messages in their windows. And as you walk around, there's just all these lovely chalk drawings on the pavement that people have left to kind of brighten everyone's day. And it's really nice to see.
That's lovely. That's a good idea. Do you know, Jim, I was in one of our earlier podcasts, I was speaking with Danny, who, of course, played Zoot. And Danny, with his children, they were, I said, what are you up to today? He said, they're going out bear hunting. And me... I took it literally, and I thought, bear hunting in Auckland, like, and I had visions of them going out. So I literally did. I couldn't work it out, and I said, I was too embarrassed to pick him up on. I thought, poor, he must mean maybe pig hunting or, you know, goats or something.
Have been all those memes going around about nature returning to the cities, but I don't think we're quite at the stage of grizzly bears in downtown Auckland yet.
Oh, hello again, Caleb. Caleb's up in Churchill
he doesn't need to worry about them returning, does he? They're all the time.
They're literally in he was saying in the town, so that's quite amazing. So I think I've got problems here, Jen, looking for toilet paper, you know, which is the new goal. You know, but at least I don't have grizzly bears, so it's great to connect and have this chance to talk. And when we say you're working from home, you post the tribe went to study law, didn't you, Jen?
I did, yeah. I got my law degree and practiced in New Zealand for a couple of years, but I was working in the Māori Land Court, so doing Indigenous land law. And then when I went to the UK for a bit of a sort of OE, our overseas experience, that's a traditional part of sort of Kiwi life for a lot of us, I found that there wasn't much call for Indigenous land lawyers on account of Normans having cleared out about 1,000 years previously. So I ended up getting into more sort of business-focused stuff, and I'm now working in business services in a law firm back in Wellington. So coming full circle, really.
And that's interesting. That had you always been interested in the Maori culture, Jen? What drew you to specialise in Indigenous law?
Well, it was sort of a combination of things. It was a position that I found really fascinating. I ended up working as a judge's clerk, which was an amazing experience. And to be able to be involved in sort of Waitangi Tribunal decisions and writing judgments for our chief judge, who also functions as the chief judge of the High Court of Niue. And in the time that I was working there, Niue had scrapped its criminal code and hadn't yet created a new one, so there was actually no law to write judgments from, which was a really fascinating position to be in. So it was just a really wonderful place to work, and a really just full of amazing people who are so passionate about what they do. It was really incredible.
Very interesting in Indigenous culture, and a lot of the tribal fans will know where Jenny and I were just speaking before we recorded that, you know, I have a vineyard in in New Zealand, and it's in rural New Zealand in a beautiful in the Wairarapa, which is a place called Martinborough, and I'm involved with the local marae. So, you know, I'm aware of all the treaties and the different rights, and I applaud that and support it. And I've always been interested in indigenous cultures all over the world. When I lived in Canada, very much with the Native American Indians as well in the States, and over here the Aboriginals, and it's quite fascinating, really. And you can probably hear a lot of those birds. So as you, I'm like in some rainforest here, but it's a beautiful day here in the in Australia. We're in our autumn now, isn't it, Jim? That's right. You're in the autumn and. Mm-hmm. Cold out there in New Zealand now? Or?
I was going to say it definitely feels like autumn today in Wellington. It's very cold. Well, yeah. I say very cold. Yeah, it's sort of early teens.
And in the northern hemisphere, they're coming into spring, so they'll be having daylight saving. So, Jim, you keep yourself occupied in the day working, and that's good. And then going out, you're looking for the teddy bears, which is interesting. Our Prime Minister has deemed the Easter Bunny and the Tooth Fairy to be essential workers, and I applaud that. And your two nephews, they're thrilled at Easter to the Easter Bunny visited?
Yeah, the Easter Bunny got to them a couple of days ago. So because obviously with social distancing protocols and the need to maintain hygiene practices, the Easter Bunny is taking a little bit longer to deliver some of his Easter eggs, so he's starting early. So yeah, my nephew's got a bit of an early Easter this year.
No, that's great. Well, I'm afraid I missed out this year, and I think that because I sent a little wish for the Easter Bunny to bring me some toilet paper, because toilet paper is the new gold in Australia. All the shops are empty, and you having no problem in New Zealand getting groceries and special things like toilet rolls and this kind of thing.
No, we're really lucky. I think we got in really early with the kind of supermarkets limiting people and stopping people from panic buying. There's been a couple of instances where we've gone, I think actually more before the lockdown, where you'd go in and there would be no bread or the toilet paper would be really reduced. But I don't think we've ever not been able to, you had to get something different to what you might normally get, you know, the dreadful situation of having to buy whole grain instead of soy and linseed toast, you know, that's about as deprived as we've been, which I think, again, we're really, really lucky. But I think we had so much more time. We saw it happening overseas and we're able to just take action that little bit sooner before it really hit us.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a really strange time, isn't it? And you're not feeling too anxious, Jenny? I mean, how do you, or do you just philosophically, you just take it one day at a time, or you're able to, you don't have anxieties?
Oh, no, I do. I'm an anxious person by nature, I think. So yeah. There's a tiny little bit of almost justification, feeling like, oh, everything is going terrible and, you know, the world is a scary, dangerous place. Yes. But I think in a way, you know, people who have anxiety are a little bit better equipped in some ways to cope with this, because we've been talking ourselves down off these sort of negative thought spirals for a long time. So when it starts to hit, you can just sit there and go, hang on, is this thought necessary? Is it helpful? Is this something I can actually do anything about? Or is this just something that's going to stress me out for no reason that I can't control? And making those decisions about how you interact with your thoughts and just being a bit conscious of it. Yes. I think that's been really helpful for me. And also just being quite conscious about what I consume. So I don't tend to watch the news. I don't have news apps on my phone. I check in once or twice a day to get sort of an update and an overview. And otherwise I don't. Otherwise I'd be refreshing it all day and it would be, that would not be good for my mental health. So yeah, just trying to be really careful about making sure that I'm seeing the positive in the situation and reminding myself how lucky I am. And there's no need to panic at the moment because I'm in a really lucky position that it's not affecting me too much at the moment.
No, I think that would be great advice. That, you know, I know that just from the amount of letters that we get around the world, that a lot of our tribal brothers and sisters, as we say, that within the fandom are feeling very frightened and very alone and in these uncertain times. And And so I think you know, anxiety is it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Really, that anxiety can be a good thing, and and it keeps us safe, and it keeps us kind of our imagination. And if it's in balance, and as you say, if you can kind of control it, I mean, for some poor people though, that if they feed it too much, it gets a little, you know, their imaginations perhaps, and things rarely are ever as bad as one fears, really. But it is that fight or flight. We're born with it to run from the dinosaurs, and if we about trying to control it. But I think that's good advice to perhaps give to anybody feeling anxious, not to consume too much of speculative news, and it becomes like fast food. It can kind of pollute the mind with worry, and just to take it maybe one step at a time, and to look after yourself, really. You've got to look after yourself, really, both mental health, physical health, spiritually as well. And
absolutely. And just recognizing that these are really extreme times, you know, it's absolutely important to be conscious of your mental, your physical, your spiritual health, but also just be gentle with yourself. And sometimes all you can do in the morning is, you know, wake up, get through, go to bed. That's sometimes all you can do, and that's all you need to do. Just keep getting through, and you'll eventually come to a place where things are better or easier. And
I'm often saying through the interviews that, I mean, a bit of advice through, you know, my wife and I, we set up a charity, the Cloud Nine Children's Foundation. So prior to this virus, you know, we've dealt a lot with people who deal, you know, they're in depression or anxious or struggling. And the most therapeutic thing is, they call it cognitive therapy, but it's really to talk, to pick up the phone and say, look, I'm struggling, I'm afraid, not to look at it as a sign of weakness, not to be embarrassed. But, I mean, talking about your fears can really help as well. So, I mean, that I would just add, and probably you would agree, Jenny, that if there's anybody out there struggling, never to feel, you know, badly, to really try and reach out to somebody and speak, and not to let it all bottle up inside. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that's been really wonderful about this situation is there's been so many people being much more open about how they're feeling, and it makes you realize that everyone has those thoughts, and you're almost never alone in what you're thinking or what you're feeling, especially in a situation like this, which is affecting the whole world. There's so many people out there feeling exactly the same way as you. So the best thing you can do is to reach out, not just for your own self, but because you might help someone else who realizes that they can reach out as well.
No, that's terrific. And I mean, that's actually a segue into these podcasts that we thought we would do them to maybe, you know, to people are locked in their houses and are getting a bit sick of watching television or whatever, that, you know, for the tribal fans, maybe, you know, 45 minutes, an hour's chat might help pass away an hour, but also to maybe to share, look, you know, we're all in this together, and we're interconnected, and as you rightly say, all over the world, at least we can take comfort in knowing that we're not alone in facing this, and we just have to have faith in the governments and the powers to be that, and I think it's working, and we'll get through this. I mean, we just got to patience and persistence, you know, we just got to slow it all down and try and keep calm, and one day at a time, and all will be well, I think. And so, Jen, just on some other, I mean, if we could talk about before the tribe, you and I, we go back. I was working out before, do you know, it's 25 years.
Yeah.
It's frightening, isn't it? And now, how can that be for somebody my age of 29? How can we, you and I, know each other?
You were very baby-faced when we first met.
And, so I'm like the true Peter fan, and I haven't aged. But you came into my life on the Ian and Blyton Adventures series as a little girl. How old were you then?
I think I was 10.
10, that's right. That's amazing. And for the folks who may or may not be aware that our very first production in New Zealand, actually around 1995, was an adaptation of the Adventure series, and we had it was like American Idol. We had you know, searching for the cast. We had thousands and thousands and thousands of applicants, and you, Jen, through your talent and very great spirit. So how was that? Did you always want to be an actress when you were, I mean, growing up, when you were a child? You were a child, but I mean, was that something you were always interested in?
I think I was always interested in performing. I don't think I'd ever really formed a conception that it was possible to do that as a job. I still think I sort of thought about jobs as being things that happened in offices or in fire engines, or, you know, you didn't really think about the people that you see in television programs and on movies and things as that's a job. So it was quite, it all sort of felt a bit unreal, a bit like a fairy tale. I was kind of allowed to go and put on costumes and, you know, travel around all these different places and these pretend houses. And it was just, yeah, it was really wonderful.
Amazing. And one thing, I mean, I might just say about the fairy tale, I mean, I've always been a huge Disney lover, and I still am to this day. And my family and my children and grandchildren, we love Disney. And I've got great memories, Jennifer, of your audition day. And I thought, wow, that was very special. And the other memory I have is you skating with Mickey Mouse. Do you remember
at
that?
At Paris Disneyland. That was wonderful.
Yeah. And that was incredible. And again, for the listeners, that, you know, it was a big pleasure for me to partner Disney, actually. We our product was acquired by the Disney Channels in those days. And part of the deal was that they said, look, would you mind very much coming out to Disney? And I said, hello, yeah, that would be difficult. And said, if it's okay, we'd love to bring some of the cast. And I thought, well, I don't really probably need to persuade you, Jen, to do that. And your mum and father came out. And we, it was in January in a very cold snap, but we wandered around Disney filming and no queuing. So for those listeners that go to Disney, they know all of the queues to get on the different rides. Do you remember, we could get on the rides and film it, and the skating came about that I was directing it, and just some kind of behind the scenes making of documentary. And I wanted a shot with you skating. I saw Mickey Mouse in the ice rink, and so we got you to skate with Mickey Mouse. And that's, I got the footage somewhere, so I must send it to you.
That would be wonderful.
For posterity. And then after the adventure series, you did such a terrific job that you stayed on board for the follow-up Light and Secret series. And again, for trivia, Danny James, also known as Zoot, Danny was in the Secret series. And how did you find that? It was a different character you played, obviously, than the adventure series. But you then, with your experience at the grand old age of probably 11, had learned from that 10-year-old. How did you find that, Jen? You played it as a different character, which is a testament to your intuitive skill, I think. And how was that? You enjoyed it again?
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. I felt really lucky because we did the adventure series, and I thought, you know, that was amazing and so wonderful, and maybe I'll get to do something similar again one day. And then when the opportunity to do the Secret series came up the next year, it was just like, okay, that sounds amazing. And it was, I remember being, feeling like I was so grown up because I'd gone from playing the baby sister to playing the older sister. And I was like, oh, I'm a real grown up now. I'm playing the older sister.
Well, there's so many people still love those series, Jen, you know, that watch them. And we get a lot of letters from, that's touched a lot of families. It's good. I mean, Enid Blyton, of course, before J.K. Rowling, was considered to be the doyen of children's literature. Those stories are perennial. They kind of, in perpetuity, I think, will live forever. They and touch different generations. So maybe your two nephews might enjoy them at some point. And then, of course, The Tribe came along. And how did that, how was that for you? You know, because we introduced this character, Ellie, and from day one, I knew there's nobody that nobody that I would ever want to play that part than Jennifer Jewell. It was almost Harry and I and the writing team. We almost developed it with you in mind, and so you came in, and I'm just all the episodes coalesced for me. So you came in on series two,
I think episode one.
That's right, series two. And that's how did that feel? A lot of the tribe, I often say it's like all the young people coming in. It's like coming in, like being in the army, really, where we had tribals and house parents and cast houses and all kinds of stuff. So you did some of your education in the tribe schools with the tutors, didn't you?
Yeah, with our wonderful tutors.
Yeah, and that would have been difficult because, I mean, to be in the classroom and then whisked down to set to do a scene and then with exams coming. Did you feel the pressure there, or was it fun times? What's your memories of those days?
Well, I think I was really lucky because by the time I was doing the tribe, I was at secondary school, and my school were really lovely and very flexible and agreed to allow me to continue doing the same work I had been doing with them, sort of at a distance, effectively. So I didn't have to suddenly drop everything and change to a different curriculum, because on Adventure Series and Secret Series, I'd done the Correspondence School, which is brilliant and is sort of designed for kids who can't get to a regular school for whatever reason. So they are designed to be done, in those days you had tapes you could listen to. And there were sort of workbooks that you would work through at your own speed. But I remember one of the issues that I'd had with the correspondence school was they required a certain amount of time. I remember there was a science experiment that was to go outside and watch the clouds for an hour and then kind of note down how many different types of clouds you'd seen. And I was just thinking, I'm doing this in 20-minute bursts between, in downtime between shooting. We don't have time to go and lie outside for an hour and watch the clouds. So the correspondence school was great when I was younger, but I think it wasn't really that practical for the situation that we were in. So having the tutors available during the tribe was so fantastic. Not only were they really lovely people, they taught us a game called the dictionary game, where when we were being fractious and acting up and getting a bit cabin fevery, you'd go through the dictionary, pick out a random word, and then everyone would have to make up definitions. And it was just this really silly, dorky game, but it was so much fun, and it really kind of brought everyone together, because we had probably about 8 years between the oldest and the youngest kids in the classroom. So it was really, I think, challenging for the tutors to keep us all, we're all doing different work, some of us from our own schools, some of us through correspondence. And I think it's a real testament to them that they kept us sort of on track and managing to answer all our questions and deal with all of the issues that came up. But yeah, I remember it being just really fun. And I mean, it is, I suppose you're right, it is, the army metaphor is perhaps apt. There was a bit of a intense bonding that went on with just the surreal experiences that you were having, that it was so difficult to talk to kind of your peers back at school about. So it was really wonderful to have this group of people who you were, working with and socializing with and learning with. And it was really nice to have the classroom as that kind of alternative space to spend time and just to have a little bit of normality.
Yes. And Jen, it's almost like, coming in on season two, and again, I don't know, I'm just speculating here, that looking back to my days at school, that I used to hate going to a new school because I was a new kid. Did you feel like the new child on season two, coming into an already established kind of where they'd bonded on season one, or not? Or was it difficult or not really?
I was definitely nervous about it. It was one of the things that kind of really freaked me out beforehand, because I'd, during the last two shows that I'd done with you guys, we became this really tight sort of unit, and you got to know these people incredibly well, and they became more like family than sure. just people you saw. So I was really nervous about how it would be to join a group that had already been established. But I think the very first time I met some of the other cast members, Tony I already knew, because we'd done a show together when I was about six and we were at the same high school. So we'd known each other for years and years. But I think the first time I met the others was when I came in to have my hair dyed for the first time, or bleached. And I think, if I remember correctly, it was Mikey and Ash who were there the same day as me, having sort of makeup tests and hair dye and all the rest of it applied. And so the very first thing I remember is having the bleach applied to our hair and then running up and down the corridors of the studio, because the bleach was really, it's really sore when it sits on your head and starts to kind of burn the color out of your hair. And we would run up and down the hall to sort of distract ourselves from the sensation on our scalp. And I think after that, I realized these people are really nice and I'm going to be okay.
But you probably thought that you might think that guy that took me out to Disney, my family, I mean, we're taking good care of our cats and you're burning your hair and bleaching and putting you through this nightmarish situation. I mean, I had a chat with Mike the other day and he was said the same thing. I mean, with, you know, his kind of bright red hair, it had to be dyed blonde, and he walked around, and then Danny James putting in the contact lenses, I mean, for his weird eyes, they were painful. So, and there's me doing interviews saying, we'll look after our cats and look at, and welfare. And no, but I mean, overall, no, and it is, like you say, it's, I often use the cliche, we're like a tribe within a tribe and a family. And those friendships extend to this day, and the bonding, and it's like anything, you don't have to speak with each other on a daily basis, but you can pick up and it's like yesterday, really, just like a family within a family, really. And that's special.
Yeah. And that's really lovely.
No, it's good. Now, Jenny, I've got a lot of questions. They come in on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, but a ton of emails also. And I'm always accused of hogging the guests myself. And it's kind of a fanboy or a fan grandfather. So I love to connect and you know, don't have enough time really to chat with all the cast as regularly as I would like to. So we've got one from Simone Chong, I think it is Simone Chong from Singapore. And your character Ellie was temporarily written out of in series 4 and returned in series 5. Was there a behind the scenes reason for your short absence from the show? And that's probably because of your schooling, I would think.
I was going to say, it was a very scandalous situation of having to sit my fifth form exams. If I could have gotten out of that, I would have definitely done it. But the Ministry of Education takes a dim view of people skipping out on their exams. So, alas.
Now, this is a very abstract one from Eric Aki. I think it is Eric Aki. Good morning, Eric. I'll just read this for you, Jin. When Ellie was sick, you had to drink a lot of the fake cure that was provided by Lex and KC. But what was in it in real life? Do you remember?
Oh, my gosh. I have a funny feeling it was apple juice.
Yeah, I think so.
Because it looked awful. I think they did something to it because it looked like, I don't know. Actually, do you know what it reminded me of the first time I ever saw it?
What?
Do you remember when we did, was it Castle of Adventure? The one with the mad monk, and in the basement there was like a nuclear...
Yes, that's right.
...acid pool, and it was this... Ah, I just remember the first time I walked onto that set just being absolutely blown away because it was this luminous, green, terrifying sort of pool of liquid that was bubbling and lit from below. And I had a flashback to that when I first saw the fake antidote.
Virgin would have been there with her burning scalp after getting her hair dyed and then coming on the set and we said, have a drink of this, you know, this nightmare liquid. And but yeah, it was apple juice, that's for sure. And from Lancy Crumpton, and again, we're going to have to, I'm just reading this question, we'll go, some of the book tie-ins, we can't get into too much of that because we'll do some spoilers, so I'll just not get too much into the book side. But so Lancy, good morning Lancy, since we didn't get to see Alice and Ellie's reunion on screen, how would Jennifer envision that moment? And again, we can't go into some of this stuff that happens in there. So just for your own imagination, placing aside any scripts or books that you know of or any other sort of, how would you envisage them getting together, Alice?
I think there's no question. There'd be lots of hugs and lots of tears and lots of laughter and so much talking, all the talking. What are you doing? How have you been? What's happened? Yeah.
We do have a chat actually with Vanessa, who's your on-screen sister, Alice, and in a few days. And interesting, I mean, because of the in the tribe where we explored farming and living off the land. And are you a gardener, Jen? Do you have a vegetable garden at all? Are you into all that kind of stuff?
There is an intention to do something like that. My husband and I bought a house in August last year, and we have a little bit of garden out the back, and we've been promising to do something with it since we bought it. When we bought it, it was, oh, but it's winter, so we can't do anything now. And then we were really busy during summer, and I don't know, it's just got to that point. My mum called me the other day and was saying, oh, you know, now that we're in lockdown, you'll have so much time to work on the garden. I was just in there like, definitely. So yeah. I have great intentions of being a gardener. I'd love to have a little veggie garden and a herb garden, but yes. It's just not happening at the moment.
I mean, it's really, you know, I since a little boy in post-war Britain, you know, growing up, that we didn't have some of the luxuries like vegetables and that. But, I mean, and my mum and dad, you know, they always used to grow their own, and that's something that's kept with me all these years. And so we got a little vegetable garden on the vineyard and grow fresh produce, and it's really fun, you know, for the team there at night time in the restaurant. They will pick the vegetables, and it's really fresh, and they taste different. There's something, you know, they taste when you've grown your own, there's something very therapeutic about taste. They taste differently. I don't know what it is, but
definitely. There's nothing better than freshly picked cherry tomatoes straight off the vine. That's amazing.
No, I mean, it's a now, Jen, this is, I hope your husband's not listening to this, because I'll get and many congratulations, by the way, on that. And you're enjoying married life?
Very much so, yeah.
So if he doesn't listen to this part, because Roxanne Langham has got an interesting question. Good morning to you, Roxanne, and thank you for that. Are you anything like Elliot? And is your type of guy like Jack? Now, I'm just wondering, is your husband like Jack?
I mean, he's currently sat on the computer playing games, so I would have to say yes.
Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting? Let's see. No, and what about yourself, Jen? Are you anything like Ellie?
I think definitely in some ways. She was someone who had, I think, good intentions and sometimes took them too far, which is definitely a trait that I see in myself. And she was someone who, you know, tried to do the right thing by her family and her friends, and definitely had that sort of extended family of a whānau relationship of these non-blood people who, you know, become your family. And I think that's, you know, something that I have as well. I try and put my friends and my whānau first. But, yeah, I think there's definitely... She was a lot braver than I am. I wish I had the courage of my convictions as much as she did, even though it sometimes took her to some slightly less positive places.
That's interesting. That I think actually, Jen, that you know, I'd always viewed Ellie as a grounded person with a sense of justice, which is interesting with you going into law, and you know, who is very much on the side of what's right, and for all that is here. You know, we explored different relationships with Lieutenant Luke, of course, and all that. But fundamentally, I mean, your character, Ellie and Jack, always represented the great love between them both. A very stable thing for. We intended that to be a stable, you know, with so much like going on, swirling around, so many love affairs and different relationships. So I think that the warmth and the love between Jack and Ellie was very stabilizing. And Sean, like a bright light, I think. Yeah, interesting. That I've got one from Melanie Fraz. Good morning, Melanie. Hi, Jennifer. I hope you're doing well. Ellie inspired me a lot when I was younger and still now. What did you like most about your character? Was there something you didn't like about Ellie? And what did you learn from the TV series and many greetings and love from Germany? That's an interesting question, Jen, isn't it?
Very interesting question. I think there were, yeah, as I said, there were definitely, Ellie had so many sort of positive qualities. You mentioned her sense of justice, which I think is a really big part of what sort of drove her. Certainly behind her journalistic endeavours was that desire to speak truth to power and make sure that the truth was being recognised and people were acting on sort of the truth. I don't know how she would have coped with the current climate of fake news and the craziness that you see now. But I think if there was anything I didn't like about her, it was I think sometimes she was quite rigid in sticking to her to what she thought was right, and she could be a bit inflexible, which I think is sometimes a negative quality, but something that I think a lot of us were doing when we were 15 was, this is the right thing to do and no one will tell me differently. I think her heart was always in the right place.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I agree with that entirely. Now, we've got one from Kim Morton Lankard, who I think is, I don't know if that's a Swedish name or Scandinavian, but so good morning, Kim. How was your life right after The Tribe ended? And how was it for you being cast in The Tribe? And what was the set of the Mal like in The Tribe series? So Kim is very interested in the Mal set. What was that like in your view, Jen?
Oh, it was the first day that I got let loose, because my first couple of weeks we were out on location in Whiteman's Valley up in the hills of Wellington. And first of all, it was bitterly cold up there. And we would always start really early in the morning. So I was so excited to get back into the studio because it was going to be warm. But also I remember the first day I got into the set, I was just blown away because it had been designed for kind of like a verisimilitude that you wouldn't normally get on a studio set. You'd normally have sort of three walls and then a blank where the camera could go. But the mall had been designed as an actual mall. You could walk around the whole set. You could walk between all of the rooms. They were all really done up, you know, as they were when we were shooting. And there was no kind of, no fake walls, no cutaway bits. The illusion when you were in there was really impressive. And I think it really added to some of the emotion of filming in there. It really started to feel like home after we'd been in there for a while. Yeah, and again, I think it really blew me away.
Yeah, again, for some of the trivia, some of the tribal fans might be interested to know that our production designer, Dan Hanna, who is very talented, a gifted, lovely human being and a tremendously gifted designer, who actually went on to win the Academy Award for, he was on the Lord of the Rings trilogy and The Hobbit, and he designed all the lovely little villages in The Hobbit. But, I mean, that was, as you say, Jen, it was real. We and I wanted to go for it. And it was, at that time, one of the biggest standing sets, I think, in the Southern Hemisphere. And all steel. I mean, as you say, you could walk around it. It was like a mini mile, really, in many ways. And lots of, very impressive. And could still be standing to this very day. And we actually, people say, what happened to that Mal? It's sitting somewhere in storage. This is you strike sets and store the sets. But Dan Anna was the man who filled the architectural kind of blueprints to bring that into an existence. And I'm not surprised he went on to great things in his career. A very, very gifted and talented designer. Now, this is interesting from Vicky, that I think, and again, this is before I ask the question, that did you ever find it difficult, Jen, as a young actress, to separate your own self from your character's self?
Oh, very much. I think you always try and sort of look for parallels, I suppose. You try and relate what you're doing to things that have really happened to you, and then that can go further into sort of putting too much of yourself into the character, or even bringing the character into yourself.
Yes, and the reason I'm asking that is that there's a very interesting question from Vicky Lawson. Good morning, Vicky. And Vicky's asking you, Jen, how did you feel when you found out Ellie was going to cheat on Jack with Luke?
To be honest, I was quite excited because they'd been such a stable couple, and it kind of felt like nothing could really rock them. But then obviously Mikey was away. I think he was doing his exams. That's why Jack got sent to the camp.
That's right.
Because he needed some time away from set to do his exams. And so there was that kind of, you know, moping around being the girlfriend whose boyfriend has had to go away or has been taken away. And then suddenly there was this new character introduced, and it was like, oh gosh, this is going to be really exciting. And it was really cool to get to play that, oh God, I think Ellie must be the worst sort of spy ever, trying to infiltrate the Chosen and then immediately falling in love with them. Yeah, it was really fascinating to try and play that, the different sort of, you know, the excitement of trying to do the espionage and then the moral conflict. And it was so much fun. And Jacob was so much fun to play with as well. It was, yeah, it was really good. I mean, on a personal level, I was a bit gutted about the fact that she fell for Luke, because I did really like the relationship that Ellie and Jack had. I think it was really, as you say, just really grounded and really supportive and positive. I think they were really good for each other and sort of tempered each other in a really nice way. But I think from a selfish perspective, it was so much fun to play all those emotions with the Luke-Jack triangle.
Very interesting. I mean, and really, I mean, for us, for Harry and the team and myself, I mean, it was a wonderful kind of a vehicle to explore, because there can be no drama without conflict, and to try and replicate the human condition and to the world that we all inhabit, really, that kind of triangle. There's many people in real life who find themselves in that same dilemma, you know, where, I mean, for your character, she probably thought that she would never see Jack again and wanted to then open up to new relationships. And then, of course, when Jack reappears, there's that kind of conflict. I mean, and for Luke, who was interesting on that, Jacob, who played, as you say, Jen, Lieutenant Luke, very, very well, has become a tremendous stuntman, actually. I don't know if a lot of the tribal fans will be aware, but he, and now the lead actor in Mad Max, and my brain's gone, what was his name? Do you know?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy, that's right. That Jacob is Tom Hardy's stunt double, and has a big, big career, and has done very, very well. And again, a lovely guy, Jacob, and I'm delighted to see his career flourishing. And also, Jen, that you may or may not be aware of a term called the Stockholm Syndrome. Do you know about the Stockholm Syndrome?
Very much so, yeah. The idea of captors starting to identify with their... hostages starting to identify with their captors.
Yeah. So in some ways, I mean, as a spy that... I mean, in the subtext that... I mean, I was always intrigued in years and years and years ago with the heiress Patty Hearst, who was taken hostage and ended up, you know, kind of joining the group. So for you falling
becoming
for
a bank robber, didn't she?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
At least all Ellie did was kiss someone she shouldn't have kissed.
That's right. So, and I kind of justified it creatively to think that that's part of the human condition, where you become you're a spy in that, but you then infiltrate the Chosen, and then you can almost, because your character Ellie was always, I mean, sometimes sensitive to other people's needs, I think, more than to her own, became quite enamored with Luke. And, you know, he was quite passionate and sincere in what he believed as the kind of lieutenant to the infamous Guardian. So, you know, he, it was quite real and truthful, I think, that Ellie could could kind of be overcome by his charms, shall we say, you know.
Now, but also that effect of humanizing someone. You know, there's a human tendency to separate people into us and them. And when the Chosen with them, I'm sure it was very easy to sort of talk about, oh, we're going to infiltrate and, you know, set them all amongst each other and it'll be this great plan. And then you get to know people and you realize actually they're, you know, they've got their own reasons for doing what they do. And everyone, well, most people, but the Guardian perhaps is an exception. Everyone's just trying to do the best they can for themselves and act in accordance with what they believe to be right and true. And if you take the time to understand people, you can actually make a lot more progress and perhaps challenging some of their more extreme views.
No, I agree. And again, that was the aspiration, Jen, you know, and during the tribe that I'd always aspired the Malrats, although within the Malrats there was kind of conflict and all kinds of things going on, but they represented a stability and swirling around all kinds from the different ideologies from Zoot and the Zootists, but the Chosen. I mean, I wanted to deal with new religions and things like that. And so, again, coming back to Disney, and I mean, forgive me, listeners, for repeating myself, but I always thought the Malrats were Jiminy Cricket in the sense that, being a Disney lover, that Pinocchio, the reason Jiminy Cricket came into being was that he represented the conscience in Pinocchio. And so the Malrats were a conscience, you know, for that crazy world post the adults. And so in building a better new world we had to explore and try and keep an open mind and see different points of view and to see beneath the face, you know, that the real human motivations. And so for Luke, he was sincere in his beliefs with the Chosen, and even if we didn't agree with them, but it's a human level. And I think you're quite right, if we can try and understand where people are coming from. And that now, this is an interesting question from Hayden Sheffers, I think it is. So good morning, Hayden. Now, how was it playing Ellie when she lost her memory?
So much fun.
Did you enjoy it? I mean, that was kind of a weird storyline, but it was quite easy. It was a lot of, you didn't find it too, it didn't do your head in too much.
No, it was, in a way, it was, obviously it was quite challenging. I don't know anyone who's ever suffered from severe retrograde amnesia, so it's not something I could sort of base on anything apart from having seen it in other kind of TV shows and movies. But I think it was really fun because you got to sort of effectively play a new character again, because she's a lot more trusting and a lot more docile than the real Ellie was. And getting to play with the Alatini girls was just so much fun. It was just brilliant. Meryl and her sisters are some formidably talented human beings. And it was just really fun to be in a completely different, it was like doing a different show, because I never got to interact with, even just with those sets, like running around those, it was an abandoned school, I think.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, it was really fun. It was, just like doing a completely different show for a couple of weeks.
And that was a real school, actually. We took over a school and trashed it, so to speak. That's amazing. So, Jen, I got one from Alicia Perez. Good morning, Alicia. I'm just trying to find out if I can see from Vineland, Cumberland, Cape Atlantic, wherever that is. So good morning, Alicia. Which Ellie outfit was your favorite?
Oh. I think probably what me and the costume department nicknamed the Princess Bright outfit, which was the white leather bustier with pink speckles all over it and a floral top and a pink tartan mini skirt and big pink stompy boots. It was so much fun. They were all so brilliant. I loved the very first outfit she had as well, because it was these bright, wacky colors, but it had this really comfy skirt that was really easy to move in, and it came with a bonus really warm, snuggly sheepskin jacket, which was just perfect for cold mornings in Whiteman's Valley.
Well, that's great then. One from Donna Wheat. Good morning, Donna. What was your favorite tribe season?
Oh, is it cheating to say all of them?
No, that's not. When I'm asked the same question, it's like, which child do you like? My daughter? I mean, they've all got their own special ups and downs for me personally, but I would just assume it's the same for all the cast. It's difficult, isn't it, really, to...
I would, if I had to choose, I'd probably say either season two or season five, just because season two, everything was new and it was so exciting. And season five, it really felt like a family. And when we kind of knew that we probably weren't going to be coming back for a season six, I remember those last few weeks were so it just felt quite emotional, but in quite a positive way.
Yes. Now I've got one from Ramona Phillip. Good morning, Ramona. What other character of the tribe, girl or boy, would you like to have played?
I would have loved to have played Zoot.
Ah.
I think that would have been so much fun. Awesome.
Why is that, Jen? Just his manic kind of intemperance. Why would you like to play Zoot?
Just the opportunity to be so completely outside sort of consequences. He really seemed to be able to just do stuff and get away with it, and just not until he got yeeted off a balcony. But really just like so much fun. Ebony was a fantastically sort of layered, nuanced character, but she always seemed to get what was coming to her. I felt really sorry for Meryl sometimes, because she'd get these wonderful kind of, you know, speaking of Disney, the kind of evil queen scenes. But then, you know, she'd always get heartbroken, or she'd get stomped on in some way, which was really, she always seemed to, get what was coming to her. But Danny got, you know, a good run of just getting away with stuff and being quite outrageous, which I just love.
Yeah, no, I can understand that, actually. Now I've got some, I'm just going to go over to YouTube, and again, there's so many, so forgive me if I'm not able to get to them all, listeners. I'll do my best here. This is from Amy B. Good morning, Amy. Which role did you enjoy portraying more, Ellie, Lucienne, or Peggy? And Lucienne and Peggy are obviously from the Inner Blight Adventure series. Or is that the similar thing where, it's difficult to choose one, I suppose?
Yeah, I think it's... Ellie was obviously, I got to play her for longer, so I got to do more with her, which was pretty great. But Lucienne, I got to be a stroppy little girl, and I got to be dangled out of a parachute, you know, off a hillside in the Wellington wind. I don't know. There's so many great experiences with all of them. I don't think I can choose, sorry.
From Clitty Boyle, I can't pronounce the name, forgive me. So from Clitty Boyle, if you could redo your favourite scene again, what scene would it be?
From an acting perspective, it would probably be Luke's trial.
Wow.
Because that was a big, you know, lots of big emotional scenes and speeches and all the rest of it. But from a personal perspective, it would have been one of the group eating scenes in the cafeteria in the mall, because they were always somewhat chaos and a little bit carnage, but so much fun. And I just feel so sorry for the crew, because how they kept sometimes like 10 or 12 of us in line, not breaking into fits of giggles. I don't know how they got usable footage, because we would just be constantly setting each other off laughing.
That's interesting. I've got an interesting question here from, is this from the Instagram? Bear with me, from Instagram. That in this time of crisis, this is from Robbie Fryer. Good morning, Robbie. What would be Ellie's top tips at this moment in times of the current virus. What do you think Ellie's tips or advice would be as a character, not as Jennifer, but as a character, if you can think that way, perhaps, Jen? Any thoughts?
I think going back to what I was saying before about fake news, her top tip would be careful what you believe. Listen to the people who know what they're talking about and treat anyone who tells you things that seem too good to be true, treat them very skeptically and trust but verify.
Yeah, no, I think that's good. That's good advice. And I mean, just one thing, Jen, that we get a lot of people. I mean, I'm just scrolling through a lot of the emails here, and a lot of the fans are wondering, do you miss acting?
I do. I've kept it up a little bit, doing strange things here and there. From some friends and I, gosh, a few years ago now, put on a wee show in the Wellington Fringe, in a what's now unfortunately a disused movie theatre, where we did a kind of cabaret singing aviation themed show about love. It was very strange, very fringe. And then a couple of years ago, I did a immersive site-specific adaptation of The Tempest in a office building in East London, which was so much fun, but completely nuts. So I've been doing things here and there, but I do miss it. I think it's something that will always be part of my life, and yeah, something that always brings me a lot of joy and fulfillment.
Yeah, well, that's good to know that you would hopefully have an open mind. If the day ever came where I said, look, we're doing a sequel or a movie tie-in, or would you like to play Ellie again 10 years on?
Oh, with open arms, I would love to.
Oh, isn't that lovely? I'd work with you in a heartbeat, Jen, and anytime at all. And Jen, just again, we've got a lot of questions wondering. I mean, do you have any hobbies that you kind of like to get to gardening when you have time? Any other hobbies you have?
Well, in the lockdown, we've been discovering the joys of online games nights. So some friends of ours have hooked us up with a couple of different alternatives. There's a very bizarre sort of horror-themed quiz game that you can play, like a trivia quiz. Yeah. And one of my friends is a dance teacher, and she's been setting us sort of lockdown choreography challenges where she does a couple of bars of choreo and we have to learn it. And then we send the videos to each other in our chat group, and it's hilarious and very silly.
That's good. But that keeps you fit. I mean, that's good exercise. And I mean, do you work out? Do you belong to a gym? Do you run? Do you like to go for walks?
I'm a big walker. I do lots of, well, obviously not at the moment, but hopefully when the lockdown lifts and the weather gets a bit better, I'm hoping to take my husband on some of the great walks of New Zealand.
Oh, lovely.
I think there's something very soothing about getting out into nature and just being away from the real world and, just doing some, the Japanese have a term for it called forest bathing. And it's just that feeling of being sort of in nature and recognizing your own sort of essential inconsequentiality.
The Japanese, I mean, I'm fascinated with the Japanese culture, the Shinto religion, where they worship all things. Mm. And it's very, in fact, partly, I mean, you must put on your bucket list to come and have a walk around Turahana Estate in Marlborough. I'd love to share,
definitely.
But it's beautiful, Mother Earth and the natural world, and to slow down to the speed of life and to, as you say, to get into nature. And it's very, very, very therapeutic and very spiritual, really. And would you be religious at all, Jen? Or would you classify yourself as very spiritual?
No, I'm a happy little atheist, but I think there's definitely something bigger than the person in life, which is an incredibly vague way of saying, I don't know what it might be, but I think whether it's just, you know, the immensity of nature and, I don't know, this is probably harking back to too much time spent studying Burke's essay on the sublime and the beautiful, but just that feeling of our essential smallness and impermanence compared to the incredible life cycles of mountains and, you know, going and seeing Tāne Mahuta and just recognizing the incredible longevity and permanence of an organism like that is just really, I think, can be really helpful to put some of the daily worries into perspective, perhaps not so much a worldwide pandemic, but.
No, I agree. And it's interesting out of this that, you know, I'm sure we all do, you know, I mean, I often think, why did I buy myself a 2020 calendar, you know, because nothing so far is going to plan, you know, and but also in that it's interesting. I mean, as a writer, fill in the blank page, I tend to procrastinate, you know, because it's like a self-inflicted nervous breakdown. But the good thing about being a procrastinator, if you're putting off doing one thing, you're actually in that vacuum doing something else, you know. And the good thing about this time is, without trivializing it, it's obviously a very worrying time, a global pandemic. It's very worrying and uncertain, and I understand that. But at the same time, it's a welcome chance to press pause, even if we're forced to do it, and to maybe reflect. I mean, out of this, there must be something good that can come out of it. And perhaps philosophically, that what we're discussing today, Jen, is part of that, where we can maybe reflect and think, well, our values, I mean, maybe we need to place value in other areas where maybe we, you know, taken a bit too much for granted, and that's friendship, for love, taking time to maybe not in this fast-paced kind of material world where we're rushing around, and as good as technology is and the internet and computers, which I embrace, I mean, I'm not against it, but it can really, I mean, we explored it in seasons 4 and 5 with the paradise thing and virtual reality, because I worry about what kind of world our children and my grandchildren will inhabit, and for successive generations, and so, you know, with the environment and global warming and all of that, where this has come right out on left field, to as if somebody's saying, look, you know, don't be too arrogant about your life, you know, that stop and rethink and maybe reset. And so I think that's I find it quite inspiring, really. And I've been saying to my family, to my children and my grandsons, you know, that take this time and to maybe appreciate this time, like look at it in a positive way. If something good can come out of it, and there must be something good, and so it's a bit abstract, really. That so, Jen, our hour has flown by. I mean, I'm sorry if I've been able to Tribe World to get to all the questions, but before we close, I was just wondering, Jen, if there's anything you'd like to say to the tribal brothers and sisters around the world, because we were actually going to get together on a bit of a reunion on our 20th anniversary, and here we are, like almost living in an episode of The Tribe, you know. So, but if there's anything you'd like to say, I'm sure they'd love any message of for the 20th anniversary, but also the uncertain times that we live in. Any thoughts on?
Well, just thank you, first of all, for continuing to sort of send us your love and continuing to commit yourselves to, you know, watching and engaging with this program that we had the incredible good fortune to be involved with 20 years ago now. And thank you for, you know, continuing to bring your wonderful creative minds to bear on it. You know, we've seen some really incredible stuff, even in the, you know, the last couple of years, which is so long since we originally made this, and you guys are still coming up with some really incredible stuff. So thank you for that. And just at the moment, it's a really scary time, and not to diminish that in any way, but just to stay safe. And in New Zealand, we talk a lot about our bubbles, which is our group of people that we can sort of safely be with. So keep your bubbles safe. Look out for your friends and family, check in on people who might not be doing okay, and just see if there's anything you can do, even if it's just a phone call, to cheer them up or check in on how they're getting on, and wash your hands.
Yeah, no, I think that's great.
We'll meet on the other side of this.
No, that's good advice, Jen, and I think that I totally agree and endorse everything you've said on that. And there's just one thing I must add, which is very important, that some of our tribal brothers and sisters will remember a young lady in Germany called Lena, who came to notice through my charity via the very talented actor Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who has a great community like our mirroring our tribal. Their community has hit record, and Buttercup in this kind of avatar, and she, her dream, I mean, she struggles, she's on the autistic spectrum, and she would love to come to New Zealand, and her biggest, Ellie is her favorite tribal character, and you, Jen, have inspired Lena very, very much, and so if you don't mind just giving a shout out to Lena, could you?
Absolutely. Lena, I was really privileged to make a little video for you, gosh, back when I was living in England, so far away from New Zealand, and I completely understand the distance is phenomenal. And I think even just contemplating that, you know, on any normal day is a huge journey to make. And the fact that you were preparing to do it with all the additional anxiety that you were feeling, I think is really incredible. And I really hope that once all this COVID-19 has settled down and it's safe to travel again, that we do see you in New Zealand and in Wellington. And I'd love to see you when you're out here.
Oh, that's lovely. And I, again, endorse that and send my best wishes to you, Lena, if you're listening to this. And really for all of us, that it's like one step in front of the other, just one step at a time. And it doesn't matter where we start. It's all that matters is where we finish. And you can have no time for that adversity. And it's not the storm, all the cliches that we encounter, but how we set our sails. So just one other thing, Jen, before we leave, if you don't mind getting into it. We're talking about COVID-19, you know, the virus and Divaldees and Buttercup and Lena and all the things that go on. That you recently have had some health scares, haven't you?
Yeah, so towards the end of last year, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And I was really lucky to be, in Wellington. I had an amazing team based out of Wellington Hospital. I think it was about 10 days after I got the official diagnosis that I started my treatment. It was incredibly fast. And everyone I dealt with was just so wonderful and took such great care of me. But it was really scary. And it's made me quite evangelical about screening programs, because my cancer probably wouldn't have been picked up if it weren't for my routine cervical smear. So everyone who has a cervix, make sure you get it checked. It's definitely put the pandemic into perspective for me, because just this week I got the all clear and I'm now officially cancer-free as far as medical science can tell, which is great. But had those results come in differently, I would have been booked in for surgery next week. It's been interesting.
No, been very stressful, and I kind of I endorse that entirely, and I think also for some of the tribal brothers around the world, make sure that you get screening for prostate cancer as well. It's very, very important, and all of the, as we were discussing earlier, Jen, the news media, it's all consumed obviously with the virus, and that's understandably so, but interwoven with that, we do need to look after ourselves. And like oxygen, as we say on an airplane, you've got to give yourself oxygen to give those you love oxygen. And you've got to look out for your mental health, your physical health, your spiritual health. And the way to do that is early detection is the best, really. And so good for you. Yeah. And may you're blessed and well done and continued good health, Jen. And thank you for sharing that. And so it's a very important message, I think, that Jen's brought to you within tribal, so you take heed of that, because we all love you and care about you and care about one another, and so we've got to do that. So look after yourselves out there in tribal as well. Well done, Jen. You know, before we close, Jen, I just like to myself wish everybody in tribal my love and best wishes, and to keep the dream alive, and to keep going, to stay indoors and follow the instructions of the government and never lose hope, and all will be well in the end. So Jennifer, thank you very, very much on behalf of your fans and Tribe World for taken the time to chat. I've enjoyed it very much, and
thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
No, it's been fun, and lots of love to you. You take very good care of yourself, and we'll catch up very soon, no doubt. And so until then, all the very best to you, my dear, and you take good care, and we'll catch up very, very soon. Bye-bye for
Thanks,
now.
Ray. I look forward to it. Bye.
Thanks, and all the best. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.